This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Dashrin Johan, and it's World Press Freedom Day today. According to the UN, World Press Freedom Day is observed as a reminder to governments of the need to respect their commitment to press freedom. And it's also a day of reflection among media professionals about issues of press freedom and professional ethics. So in light of that, my guest on today's show is a journalist from Myanmar who goes by the name Cape Diamond. As we know, in February, Myanmar's military kicked out the governing pro-democracy party NLD. Since the takeover, citizens of Myanmar have been endlessly protesting the military junta, and in return, the military has been responding with violence and without mercy. Welcome to the show, Cape. I hope you're well.
Hey, thanks so much for inviting me to your show, and I'm very honored to be participating and joining the show.
The honor is mine, Cape. Now, when we were planning the interview, Cape, you asked me if the interview was going to be on a video as well. And if it is, you'll have to discuss the details with your security team back in Myanmar, you know, if it's safe for you to do that or not. Cape, paint a picture for us. What are journalists in Myanmar going through right now?
Well, of course, I have to discuss with my team for the... Because of the security concern, right? It is because the situation of the journalists in Myanmar under the junta is not really good in terms of the press freedom and the freedom of speech. Well, Myanmar don't really have freedom of speech and the press freedom, even under the civilian government time. During the last 5 years, I have to say, of course, that we have a little bit of the press freedom in the past 5 years. We were able to write something that was critical to the government. But still, at the time, it was not really easy for us to be very critical of the government, and the it was not really easy for the journalists and the media to, you know, widely cover the news about the military, even, you know, under the civilian government time, because the military have I don't want to say authority, but they have those, you know, authorities given by the constitution to control the forces, you know, even under the civilian government right. time. So they can arrest a journalist anytime. They can take action against the journalist. But at the time, the civilian government was not able to defend and was not able to cover the journalists. And of course, if we are looking at the cases, in, charges against the journalists, many of them are many of the cases were filed by the government against the journalists and the media. I'm talking about the government, which means that the civilian government.
Mm-hmm. When you say the situation isn't good right now for journalists, for media, what do you mean? What happens when, let's say, the media decides to go on air or write an article in Myanmar about the military junta, criticizing them, trying to hold them accountable? What sort of action is taken against the journalists?
Well, they are closely monitoring the media, especially the media, the local medias, and the you know, the journalists who are covering Myanmar. So even they are very sensitive with the word, you know, like what people use, like their title and, you know, something like that. So they're closely monitoring it, and it's like we're going back to the day that we had the censorship, you know. So they said, okay, don't report about that. You know, this is not good. You are not, you cannot write about this. You know, so some people, you know, they go into the hiding, and of course they were still reporting it. And some people, I mean, some journalists, so they're not able to carry on their attacks, and you know they left the industry because you know they are in danger, and of course they were receiving the threatening from the military. So that's why I said the situation here in Myanmar are not really good for the journalists. Now everyone is worrying about you know the crackdown and the brutalities and the the shooting, you know, like even during the protest and even you know outside of the protest, which means that you know that they come and take you at night, you know, where you are. They will come to your home and they will, you know, like take into you to you know to the interrogation center and they will interrogate you, something like that. So that's why many journalists in Myanmar are in hiding, and some of them already left the country, and some of them went into the hiding, like in the ethnic armed group controlled territory area. You know, so last week the local media Mizima posted the video of them, you know, working from the jungle. You know, so Mizima is one of the five independent media license revoke, the big independent media license revoke by the junta. You know, so they had to leave Yangon and they went into the hiding in the jungle, but they are still carrying out their work. So something like that.
Now the coup happened in February. What went through your mind when the coup happened? Because to me, at least, it seemingly happened suddenly and without warning.
Well, the people in Myanmar, we were not that surprised, and we were kind of aware of the situation, what was going to happen, because, you know, during those days, I mean, the last week of January, there was a press conference held by the military in the capital, Naypyidaw. And at the time, they were talking about the election fraud and they were criticizing the civilian government and also the leading political party, NLD, which is Aung San Suu Kyi party. And they say, you know, oh, there was a fraud and like kind of cheating, blah, blah. And of course, and then there was some questions, you know, toward the military spokesman, whether the military will stage, you know, a coup. Like it was like the spokesman was rule out, you know, the questions, you know. And then like then we understood that, okay, you know, it might be happen. And of course, those days, the military chief said, oh, you know, they will defend the constitution, something like that, blah, blah, blah. So then people in Myanmar are puzzling and they say, okay, you know, it can be happen. Who knows, right? But the way they staged the coup is not that people expected. And it was like, you know, they just detained the civilian leaders and they blocked the compound of the elected MPs, you know, the member of parliament,
right,
in the capitals, and that was the coup. Mm-hmm. And like they took over the power. So yeah,
not surprised is what you're saying.
Yeah, I was in the capital at the time. You know, when the coup happened, I was in the capital. You know, it was where the coup is. You know, because I was there to cover the parliament. Mm-hmm. You know, the first day of the parliament, so I was there, and and of course the parliament was not happen, and everyone was detained, and of course, since the next day, you know, they were following the journalists, and they started, you know, chasing out the journalists. So you know, even it was not really safe for us to be there. So we left the capital. So we have to say, like, we evacuated from the capital and we came back to Yangon. So yeah, it was not really a surprise.
Let's turn back time a little bit, Cape. How long have you been a journalist, and was there a particular reason why you decided to be a journalist?
Yeah, I was particularly, to be honest, I was particularly interested in the radio journalism, you know, and because during the years, you know, we were under the junta, you know, back in the days, you know, before 2010, we were only able to listen the radio, you know, like the shortwave radio, like the Burmese services, you know, that are broadcast, you know, from that were air from the Western countries, you know, but in Burmese services, you know, this is how we were able to consume the news information. I was really young at the time, you know, but I was with my grandfather, and who was listening radios every morning and every evening. So mm-hmm. I was with him, and I, of course, those days, especially there was a Saffron Revolution, you know, in 2007 in Myanmar. It was led by the Buddhist monk and the students, you know. So that was a revolution. And of course, those days, you know, I was with my grandfather and listening the radios every day to consume the information. So I was really interested in the journalism since that time. And of course, I had a chance to join those like journalism classes and the courses, you know, after a year after my high school finish. And of course, at the time I was studying at the university as well. But the keyest thing for me is that, you know, I did not really go to the campus university, and it was like, you know, the distant education university. So, you know, I was studying English specialized major at the university, but it was not like the campus university. So I didn't really need to go to the university. You know, so I can study from my home. So that's why I had an extra time to study journalism. It was great. So yeah, that's how I became a journalist. Right. I was really interested in it. Yeah.
Now, okay, Myanmar has struggled a lot when it comes to the battle for freedom and democracy. I'm guessing you weren't born yet, right, during the original 1962 coup d'etat. But what was it like growing up completely under the military's ruling until the third constitution was enacted in 2008?
Well, I mean, it was not really a good experience, or it was really a good feeling growing up under the dictatorship, right? Mm-hmm. Because everything was left behind, even in the region, right? When you look at the other countries and their development, it was really good. It was really like inspiring, you know. Oh, look, like Thailand and Malaysia and even Indonesia, of course, Singapore. So, of course, Myanmar was behind. No, even we have to pay for like at least $5,000 for one mobile SIM card during those days, $5,000. So nobody was like able to use the mobile phone, and it was really expensive. It was tightly controlled. There was no internet. Of course, we had internet, you know, in those days, like 2006, 2007, but it was really slow, and censorship, you know, no YouTube. And it was really, really slow. Even we have to like take a lot of time to open the email and Gmail, you know. So this is just like the basic thing, right? And also in terms of the rights and the human rights things, and it's not good. People were not able to talk about the politic, you know, in their daily life. It was like kind of prohibited things, you know, to talk about Aung San Suu Kyi and the pro-democracy movement. So you can be detained and you can be arrested if you talk about them, if you talk about it. So and also, you know, like for the students, the education is not really good. So I have to admit it, you know, I didn't really have a good education here in Myanmar, because, you know, the education was like very blurry, and what we have studied at the schools, you know, high schools, was not what we were supposed to have it, you know. So we learned the histories, you know, like those history were not that accurate, you know, something like that. And also everything were tightly controlled and ruled by the military generals during those days. So they were everywhere, like their properties were everywhere. So nothing was not good, I have to say.
And did a lot of things change in 2008? What was the feeling then? Because, you know, we have the new constitution where Myanmar was taking steps towards becoming a better a democratic nation. Were things better compared to pre-2008? Did you see hope that things were improving slowly, bit by bit?
Well, of course, 2008 is the year that, you know, like we have a constitution. So then in 2010, there was the first elections, you know, under the junta in 2010. So at the time, the military back, you know, the party USDP won an election. So in 2010, at the time there was no NLD participation, you know, in the election. So at the time, of course, they won the election. Many senior generals, they turned into the politicians, you know, they removed their military uniform and, but of course, like they became a civilian politician. So they were ruling, you know, 5 years from 2011 into 2016. It was like, during those days, I have to say, of course, it was not a proper democracy government, but it was somehow that I think they wanted to show the world that, you know, they are in the transition. They are going to the transition, democratic transition. That's why they were trying to show the world that they were opening for everything. You know, they were opening for those changes. Like they invited, you know, the pro-democracy activists, you know, back to the country, you know, who left the Myanmar during the revolution in 1988 or 2007. So they were inviting them again to come back to Myanmar and, you know, to work with the government. So at the time, many pro-democracy activists and many pro-democracy politicians coming back to Myanmar. And of course, they were even inviting the exile media to come back and work, you know, in the country. For example, like Democratic Voice of Burma, we know as like DVP, and other exile media like Misima and Ayawadi, you know, they were inviting them to come back and work here because they were exiled, you know, like in Thailand and other countries, right? So they were inviting them to coming back again. So I think it was like, you know, there were some changes during those days. But still, you know, there were some oppressions, you know, on the human rights activists and the journalists. I have to say, you know, we were not able to like uncover, you know, and write about the crime that military committed or what the military government junta have done previously before 2010, something like that. But of course, we had another general election in 2015 where Aung San Suu Kyi led National League for Democracy, NLD, won in landslide victory. So then in 2016, you know, Aung San Suu Kyi became a kind of head of the state because she was not becoming a president, but she was appointed as the state councilor. And because she was not able to become a president because of the constitution, you know, constitution bar her from becoming a journalist because she, according to the constitution, her husband and her children were not are not the Myanmar citizen, you know, so she cannot become a president. So but she was appointed and as the state counselor. So then since then, you know, she'd been like ruling the countries, you know, she'd been controlling. And it is very sad for us to say that, you know, the freedom of speech and the press freedom index is going down under her government time. So when we compare to the number, you know, of the cases charges and her government time is more than what happened to the journalists under the previous government time from 2010 to 2015. Right. And that's what I said, you know, even under the civilian government time, the journalists were struggling, you know, with their, like, getting their rights. Yeah.
Mm. Well, on that note, we do need to go for a very quick break. In conjunction with World Press Freedom Day, I'm speaking with Cape Diamond, a journalist from Myanmar, on the role of the press in the fight against the military junta. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and with me on Zoom, all the way from Yangon, is a Burmese journalist, Cape Diamond, who's talking to me about the role of the press in the fight against the violent, unelected military regime that has taken control of the country. Cape, why do you think press freedom is important?
Well, the press freedom is really important because, you know, especially in this case, you know, people do really need to know what is happening behind what's gonna happen. Of course, you know, we are not that able, we're journalists, right? We're not fortune teller. We're not able to tell what will gonna happen, you know, like 100%. But, you know, we need to tell them what we know, you know, what our sources tell us, you know, what the constitution, what the institution, what this army, what this government is doing. We need to tell what we know, right? Otherwise, you know, the people will be in the you know, the propagandists, right? So we still have the propagandists in the country, the propaganda from the military. They have their own the media channel, they have their state newspapers, so they're trying to control and spread their propaganda over the people, the civilian. But of course, it is our duty to tell the people that what is really happening. Like, we have to give them the right information. So I think that's why the press freedom is really important, especially in the countries like Myanmar.
And what has your experience as a journalist in Myanmar been like over the years? Have you personally ever been called up by the authorities or investigated?
Well, personally, I have not been those, like, called up or the investigated by the authorities. But I was, like, really careful, and I was lucky, I have to say, to be honest, and I was very cautious, you know, what will happen. And of course, I have to take all the precaution and what I should do. And of course, it's very sad that my friends were, you know, sent to the jails over the years for what they were doing as a journalist. Like, my friends, to some of my friends, they were covering the news about the ethnic armed organization, and then they were arrested and they were charged under the act, you know, the Unlawful Association Act, which means that, oh, you know, you are not able to talk to the ethnic armed organization, because ethnic armed organization are the unlawful association, so you're gonna be charged. So this is how my friends were charged. And also, like, my friends, you know, who were covering the Rohingya crisis, you know, and my friends from the writers, so they were arrested and they were charged because simply they are doing their job. But it was not what military don't like, and it was not what the government don't want to see. So they were arrested and they were charged. And also many of my friends, you know, they were followed by the authorities, and, you know, they were hassled, and some of them left the country. Some of them, you know, were in hiding even before the coup, you know. But for me, is, you know, I'm still trying to be very careful, and, you know, but of course, still I have to do what I have to do, And because people really need to know what is happening.
What keeps you going? So, you are someone who speaks out about the injustices that's going on in Myanmar right now. You're constantly tweeting about it. You're now talking to me about it. But at the same time, you know, you hear stories, you are seeing it in person. Your friends are being investigated and hunted down. Activists are being arrested. Is it scary going through all of this? And what, at the end of the day, what keeps you fighting?
Well, for the justice, you know, for everyone in Myanmar right now, not only me, the journalist, but also, you know, the students, you know, the elders, the government servant, I mean, you know, the one who joined the civil disobedience movement. Everyone is now the fighting, you know, for the justice, you know, because everyone believes that, and we are suffering that, you know, there's no justice since the coup, you know, so every day. So I think not only me, but also them as well, you know, like, are not gonna like stepping back, and of course we will do what we have to do, you know. So I think that's a somehow you know, encouraging for us to do our job. And of course there are so many people who are in trouble, like as I mentioned, the civil disobedience, you know, like the workers who joined the civil disobedience movement, you know, they've been arrested, you know, their families were hassled, and they even, you know, they were hunted down, but they keep doing their job, you know, and it was really brilliant. It was really brave. So yeah, that is one of the reasons that, you know, we keep doing our job.
Now, these protests, they have been very inspiring, the protests that's going on in Myanmar, you know, but what changes are you hoping to see at the end of all this? Of course, on the one hand, right, we want this military dictatorship to end and for democracy to be restored. But on the other hand, Myanmar was facing a lot of problems in relation to democracy and human rights even before the military coup. You talked about some of the restrictions placed on top of journalists, for example, by Aung San Suu Kyi's party. And the current constitution has been seen as a little problematic. Even Aung San Suu Kyi herself, you know, she was once a revered figure. Then she went on to support and endorse the genocide of Rohingya Muslims. So coming out of this, at the end of all this, what are you hoping to see?
Everything, you know, is going back under the title of the justice, you know. This is really important, and that, of course, you know, we've been suffering a lot, you know, under the military rule regimes over like 60 years, you know, and because the country was under the military regime, you know, since 1962, and then like there was a coup again, you know, like, so we experienced these successive, you know, military rule, you know, in our life. So we knew how it was look like. We knew that there was no justice, but at the same time, we had that 5 years, you know, the civilian government term, and we knew that even the civilian government did not really respect the right, you know, and they did not really work on the justice. That's what we felt, you know, regarding the Rohingya crisis and other ethnic issues, you know. We have so many problems in the countries, you know, the country military is fighting with the ethnic armed organization in different places in the country. And there's, I think I have to say, the same, you know, crime they've been committing, you know, against the ethnic people, as like what they did to the Rohingya. You know, I know very well. I have to say, because I was like covering the Rohingya crisis in those days, and many people hate the journalists and the human rights defenders, because they were kind of in belief of Aung San Suu Kyi, and they thought, oh, you know, it was right, you know, that she went to the ICJ and defend the military, you know. people didn't really understand that how and what was the real charges against, you know, Myanmar at the time. They thought, oh, she went there because, you know, she had to defend the country, but they didn't really realize that it was her who was defending the the country military, you know, something like that. So I was even there. I was you know, in the Hague, you know, covering the trial, and of course I spoke to many people, and yeah, they would really believe that, you know, she was right, you know, she came to the Hague, you know, to defend Myanmar, something like that. So, but now these people, like, they realized that it was wrong, and now they've been apologizing to the Rohingyas, and they've been apologizing to the ethnic people that, okay, they were wrong, you know, because they were believe in the military propagandas.
So does Myanmar need a new constitution?
Yeah, of course. I mean, this 2008 constitution never been a good constitution for the countries, you know. Many restrictions, like unfairness and injustice. Many people, and of course, like these pro-democracy people, like they want to abolish, you know, this 2008 constitution, and they want a new constitution in line with the federal democracy system.
All right, before we wrap up this conversation, Cape, final thoughts. What are your thoughts on freedom and why we shouldn't take it for granted?
Freedom means, you know, like so many things to us. You know, even here in Myanmar, people don't really have freedom in their life. Even they don't have a freedom, you know, to use the internet, because here we have an internet shutdown. You know, there's no mobile data, internet. So you cannot really go and use internet outside, you know, when you left the home, you know. Even there was an internet shutdown at night, kind of curfew style nightly internet shutdown from 1 a.m. to 9 a.m. every night, you know. But it was lifted last week. But imagine, you know, you're living in the 21st century, but you're in 2021, but you have no right to use the internet, you know. So nowadays, internet is like kind of, you know, basic human right, you know, like essential need, you know, in our life, right? But the junta, you know, take your right away. So people right now feeling and suffering that, you know, they seriously need the freedom, you know. Of course, in terms of the politics, of course, we need to have a freedom, you know, to elect the democracy government. In terms of the education, you know, we need the freedom to the study what we want to study, you know. So for the people, like in Myanmar, the freedom means a lot.
Well, on that note, Cape, thanks so much for speaking with me today. Keep fighting the good fight, and we are all in solidarity with you. We are all rooting for y'all.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks so much for inviting me, and it was really an honor for me to talk to you about, you know, what is happening here in Myanmar and how the situation of the press freedom, you know, in the countries. And of course, I believe that we will succeed the revolution.
Definitely. I am rooting really hard for this revolution to succeed. Thank you so much, Cape. The honor was mine. That was Cape Diamond, a journalist from Myanmar, speaking to me about the role the press is playing in the fight against the military junta. I mean, this is in light of World Press Freedom Day, which is today. So if you missed any part of the show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download the podcast on the BFM app or BFM.my. You just have to search Live and Learn. Once again, I'm Dashan Johan, and this has been Live and Learn on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.